will not affect that at all. You said that you were born over where again?
Mariana, Florida, in Jackson County.
Okay. And that was in 1912?
1912, February the 12th, 1912.
What kind of work was it that your father did?
He was farming at that time. I'll hold this film until you can write a film.
I
was farming at that time. He was farming at that time for his brother-in-law, Nelskito. Mm-hmm.
Did you all raise cattle up there, too?
Some did. We did not. We was a sharecropper on farming. And I was about age 8 whenever he moved away and started working for other people as sharecroppers and working turpentine in woods and different places.
Did they have turpentine camps up near Mariana, too?
Yes, sir. They had them we lived at several places, Clarksville, Marysville, and several little country wayside places that we lived at turpentine camps when I was between the ages of 8 and 12 years old.
Were those turpentine camps segregated at that time?
No, sir.
Both blacks and whites?
Both blacks and whites. Mostly blacks in most places was blacks.
That's what I was thinking. Most of the turpentine camps I'd heard about, the workers were primarily black. That's why I was wondering.
No, it was not segregated.
Hmm. So you all worked on those for about 4 years, just going from camp to camp?
Camp to camp, until we reached White City, about 7 miles north of Port St. Joe in 24.
In that time, you would have been 12 years old.
Yeah, 12 years old.
And you all just sort of settled down there for a while?
We moved from White City in the fall of either 24 or the spring of 25. We moved on to Port St. Joe, and we settled in and around, not all together. We stayed there for a while, and we moved over in Tyndall, to what they call Belle Isle, close to Farmdale. Mm-hmm. Turpentine a while there, moved to Overstreet, turpentine a while there, moved to Weewahatchee. And Daddy was working for the county road department. Mm-hmm. Bit on the ferry. We moved back in, I believe it was in 26, to the ferry at Overstreet for all of 26 and all of 27. And we moved there. We had 8 months of 26. We moved, stayed that 8 months, and all of 27 and 7 months of the next year. And in other words, it's 2 years and 7 months that we run that ferry. And in December of 28, we moved to McNeil's, which is Indian Pass trading post now with Astoria. Mm-hmm. And we started turpentining there.
Is that's right near Port St. Joe again?
It's 12 miles south of Port St. Joe, southeast.
All this time, was your father supplementing the food and income a little bit by doing fishing and things
no,
like
sir.
That?
No, sir.
None at all.
No, sir. He didn't do any of that. Well, at one or two short periods of time, he might have fished a month or so, but not very much. He was not a fisherman. Mm-hmm. He was a landlumber. He loved the land.
Now, you said that you all were running the ferry. Could you tell me how that worked?
Yes, sir. We had a barge, a flat barge, with a drop apron on each end of it. It was flat, about, I'd say, 18 inches deep, or 18 to 24 inches deep, and it was, say, about 14 feet wide and about, I'd say, 30 feet long, because you could put three cars on it. Mm-hmm. And it had a drop apron on each side, and the banisters on one side was raised and forked, and the cable that we pulled it by laid in those forks. Mm-hmm. And it was tied to one end, and we had a winch on the end next to where we lived, and we could drop that cable down in the water to the bottom and let boats go over. And we could raise it up tight in the slot of that ferry, and then we could walk that ferry we'd taken a piece of wood and made a notch in it about 18 inches long and hooked it over that cable, and our feet would push the ferry forward either side, and when we run it up on the edge of the bank, we'd drop that drop apron. So it would fit the ground and would tie it to a stake. Cars would drive off and it would drive on. Mm-hmm. And then we'd pull it back to the other side.
How much did you charge a car to go over on the ferry?
It was free. The county paid us.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Is there now a bridge over that creek or river?
There is a floating a floating bridge across there now, where it swings back and lets water traffic through with a winch, and then they got the drop aprons right on, and it's a one-lane traffic across that floating barge. It goes up and down with the tide. Mm-hmm. It's a one-lane bridge there now.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Well, how did you get so involved over the years with maritime work of different sorts that you do?
Well, I can't hardly get to you there. After so many years, after I had married and worked around in different places, I started to commercial fishing with Rarefield Fisheries.
Now, where are they located?
Port St. Joe. Okay. It's a big fishing operation. Mm-hmm. I got started to fishing. I had fished some as part-time, just different intervals with different ones with gill netting mullet, just for maybe a few months at the time. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, I'd go back to public work, such as road work, railroad work, and turpentine. I'd go back from one to the other. But then, later years, after I was working with the State Road Department, when I went to work for the Appalachicola Northern Railroad Company, worked there till the war broke out and shipyard opened in Port St. Joe, Wainwright Shipyard. Mm-hmm. Came over here as a advanced helper. Went from that to blacksmith. From that to heavy forge blacksmith.
Well, let's stop and tell me a little bit about how you learned blacksmithing, if you could.
I learned blacksmithing under E.W. Waldo in Port St. Joe at the railroad shop.
Sort of an apprentice type of situation.
I was apprentice. That's what I was. I was a helper. I watched him forge and watched him run 800-pound steam hammer, and I learned to run the steam hammer, learned to strike on the anvil, learned to bend iron, and to watch him bend iron and weld iron in the forge, and I kept on watching there for about a year and a half. And then we moved, he came, and then I came to the Wainwright Yard.
Now that's a shipyard.
Shipyard. Mm-hmm. Making cargo vessels. Mm-hmm. during the war. All right, then they moved me from that to an apprentice blacksmith. Mm-hmm. And I began to learn a little more and a little more and a little more. And from that, they put me to forging under the hammer, big hammer.
Now, when you were an apprentice with Wainwright, what kind of things were they working on?
Making chipping chisels and shim stock and wedges.
Now, what's a shim stock?
Shim stock. I said shim stock. That's not what I was really meant to say. A bushing stock. Round bushing stock. They make a round, take and draw out a good piece of metal, draw out a round rod, and mm-hmm. they bore it out, make bushings. Mm-hmm. Then we'd anneal it, see, so they could fix it. And then wedges, heel wedges was mm-hmm. the primitives to fabricate steel with. A heel wedge is like that, see.
Just like this right here. Right.
So you can drive it under there and pull the steel down, see. Mm-hmm. And of course, it turned up this way. Drive it under there and fabricate the steel, push one piece down on the other one, see. Mm-hmm. And heel wedges and cable shackles and big wedges.
So it's basically for heavy industry then.
Right.
Now, the type of blacksmithing work that you do now, making the weights, were there older blacksmiths doing that kind of stuff?
Not much.
Not much.
No, there was a few people making cast net lids. Mm-hmm. And at some place, I don't know where it was, but they did make the tom weights, the big weights, and the seine lids. There's a few people, but not here, not around here.
Not right around here, as in, were they doing it down at Port St. Joe at all?
I don't know. What we did, we made our own cast net weights. Mm-hmm. And where the lead weights for the seines and so forth came from, I don't know at that time.
Okay. Did you ever do anything like wheelwright work or... that was a little late for wagons, of course.
No, sir, I never did any. All of my blacksmithing was either railroad or ships.
Or ships, okay.
Or water. Okay. Now, I worked boat work now. Mm-hmm. I couldn't put a shoe on a horse, mm-hmm. but I made a mini boat shoe.
Yeah.
Now, put a shoe on a boat.
How do you shoot? What's a boat shoe?
Well, it's a flat piece of iron that you put on the keel with a step in it to put the rudder in to hold it when you've got a swinging rudder coming through the deck. Mm-hmm. And you have a rudder stock and all up top. You have to have a foot, but I can tell you, but it won't show on that. But you build a step on it and build drill a hole through the top, and the bottom of the rudder would set on the bottom part to hold the rudder so the weight all wouldn't be on the stock up in the boat. That was a boat shoe, and it bolted to the keel of the boat. Mm-hmm. Take a piece of plat iron and roll a step in it, and then bolt it to the bottom of the boat.
And that all that prepared you in more recent, well, at that time, were you making things like oyster tongs, too?
No, sir.
That's
I did
recent.
Start while I was, you see, I didn't go back to blacksmithing for years and years after the shipyard closed. Mm-hmm. I got completely out of the blacksmithing. Mm-hmm. I did different work, state road department work, paper mill work. I worked in St. Joe Paper Company for several years, mm-hmm. and different road work and different things until I went back to my Overstreet. Mm-hmm. Went back to my Overstreet, tending the beer bridge again. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there for a while and moved to Highland View.
Now, what years are we talking about now that you're back in Overstreet?
Oh, well, just let me have to think a little bit. 56.
Okay.
About 54.
Okay, so you were working in the shipyards and stuff during the war, and then got out of it for a while, and then about 54 you got back into blacksmithing. So.
No, sir. I went to the bridge.
You went to the bridge in 54?
Bridging.
Okay.
I stayed the bridge in there for two or three years. With each bridge, and I had moved to the bridge at St. Joe, Highland View. Came to Panama City and bought this home and moved over here and applied for a job in a blacksmith shop.
Oh, what kind of blacksmith shop did they have here at that time?
Boat shop,
okay.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I applied for a job here, and I said one word that got me the job. I said, Mr. Waldo. Trained me, and this man knew Mr. Waldo.
Right,
and he said, if you worked under Waldo, you ought to know what you're doing.
Right.
Because he was the first class, the only one he ever saw.
Uh-huh.
So he gave me the job in the blacksmith shop.
Mm-hmm.
And for several years, I worked there as a blacksmith, I made boat anchors,
mm-hmm.
mud hooks, big boat anchors, up to 200 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Boat hooks, boat anchors. Chipping, gaff hooks, fishing pews, and eye bolts, and different boat shoes, and different other pieces of forged material,
mm-hmm.
brackets and stuff at Bay Machine and Welding Company until they just about went out of business. And then I left there and went somewhere else and worked a while. Went back to Bay Machine and worked for a while for a different company. Left there again and went back to the road work. Left the road work and went back to blacksmithing again at Bay Machine and Welding Company. I worked there three times.
Mm-hmm.
And then I left Bay Machine and Welding Company. Well, it wasn't Bay Machine, it was another company. But anyhow, it was the same shop. And went to the county and worked for about 7 years as a custodian for Bay County.
And then you
went on
my
Social Security. And then I worked part-time as a custodian in several different churches.
Mm-hmm.
Around about, just as a part-time. And then I left this church right down here on 11th Street,
mm-hmm.
and came and just completely quit working out at all anywhere. Started my little part-time hobby here as leads. In the meantime, I was making cast nets.
All on the side.
Even after, I made cast nets while I was at Bay Machine.
Mm-hmm.
Went on the counter, still making a few cast nets. We knitted them. By hand, taking a piece of twine, I got some of it up there. Just start a knit up here and knit it right all the way down. Put all the knots and everything in it and put the bag on it, make the lead, put the lead on it, and ready to go fishing.
Yeah, now you mentioned that you started making cast nets really about late 1920s when you had to knit them all by hand.
Oh, yeah, back in
the
20s, yeah, in early 30s.
Right.
Well, it was early 30s because it's 28. We might have made one at two for our own use in 29, but for that we went on through the 30s. During the Depression, we lived off of mullet. We lived off of mullet. Me and my daddy used to take our little old nets and go and catch us a sack full of mullet and swap them to the colored people for grocers. They didn't have no money, we didn't. We'd make a list of what we wanted to get, and they'd bring the grocers, and we'd go down a Saturday with a list and tell them what we wanted each one to get, and we'd get our grocers that way.
You trade with, barter with them.
Bartered with mullet.
Mm-hmm.
With mullet, right where I'm getting mullet today.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Now, those nets were made entirely by hand.
By entirely by hand.
Did they look similar to the ones?
Oh yeah, just like.
It's just like. You were using what, cotton at that time?
We used cotton, and then we went to Sea Island cotton.
Georgia Sea Islands.
Yeah, it was a different cotton. It was a better grade. It was improving the grade. Then from that we went to nylon.
Now, when did they start to use nylon for the nets?
Oh, nylon. We started using nylon in 55.
So you were making nets out of cotton till 55. Then.
Around 55, because we moved over here in 56, and nylon net company had started selling a nycot mixed with nylon and cotton.
Mm-hmm.
The knots were so hard to tie in nylon. See, mm-hmm. It slipped. It come loose. It was so slick, and so they made a nycot. And it started in 55, I believe it was, because I moved over here in 56, and the gentleman on the bridge was making nets out of nylon and nycot, and he was having the trouble. He was even dipping them in alum water. And I came in and started, and I come up with the idea of bonding my twine with the dip that you put on the net after you finish. You have to dip all your nets, don't knots come untied. Well, I come up with the idea of dipping my whole spool of twine in that same dip before I tied the knots, and I had no trouble with it. And then I invented the 3-inch long lead molds. We used a short lead mold, and the nets would tangle bad. And I came up with the 3-inch idea. Well, a fella gave me the idea, and I made the first mold for him, and I still got it. Sold
those
it to
the
him.
Molds that you have over
one of those molds
there.
Over there. I sold it to a gentleman, and he couldn't make no mold leads out of it, and he gave it back to me, and I made leads with it, and I'm still using it.
So you have, what, about 5 or 6 different types of molds over
there? I got about 10.
10 of them.
I believe you could come around 8 or 10 different types of molds for different nets, not for cast nets now, not for cast nets, but for different type molds, I've got probably 8 or 10 different sets of molds,
mm-hmm.
different sizes and shapes, plus 2 different tom weight molds.
Mm-hmm.
Make 2 different tom weight molds. I make tom weights anywhere from 250 to 1,200 pounds. And couldn't make them bigger if
those
they wanted.
Are the tom weights for the seine nets?
For the seine, for the purse seines,
mm-hmm.
for the commercial fishermen.
Hmm. Now, you built this blacksmith shop that's right over here after you moved into the house here.
Yeah, uh-huh.
When did the city tell you you should slow down your activity there?
Well, the city didn't tell me to quit anything but using the stuff that made the smoke. Neighbors complained about the smoke of smoking the clothesline.
Sure.
And I used to make all my leads and everything with a blacksmith shop.
Right.
Didn't have no gas at all.
Right.
Used blacksmith shop altogether.
Using coal.
When you put your green coal around your fire, it would smoke and it wouldn't go up my stack. You can see part of my stack up there now. It was 15 feet high, but it wouldn't take it up and it would come out this way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's clothesline right in that yard, and one in that yard,
mm-hmm.
one in this yard, and one in that yard, plus mine. And the neighbors complained about it. I don't want to say too much about it because I got good neighbors.
It's a problem.
And the city came and they asked me to stack it up. I stacked it up. The farmer said that was okay. But then the pollution control come and said it was causing confusion and would I convert to gas. And I did. Converted to gas for making my lids. Only time, at times at night when there's no clothes out, I do make the tom weights with my blacksmith fire. Other than that, I hardly ever fire it up.
Yeah.
And I'm very careful about the smoke and fire on account of the neighbors. I got good neighbors, and I appreciate them, and I don't want to, mm-hmm. antagonize them.
Now, how long ago did you make that, the oyster tongs that you have out
there? Well, before I left, after Bay Machine closed out, Webb, taking over the shop. I went to work for Webb. In the meantime, I had made a few while I was at Bay Machine.
For different folks around there?
I made these, I think. We stocked some, maybe just before I left. But anyway, I made some while I was at Bay Machine and Welding Company.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved on over here, and I didn't make them very regular. I just once in a while I make a set of tongs. I've sold several pairs to different people that I made up.
Do you also repair them for people sometimes?
No, sir, I don't do very much repair. I have repaired a few pair, but I don't do very much repair because my welding machine ain't quite big enough, heavy enough, to weld as good as it should weld.
Mm-hmm.
See, I've got a little welding machine, but it doesn't put out enough heat to do too much. I don't do much repair work.
You made the handles for the tongs yourself, too?
Oh, yes, sir.
Did that mean that you also have probably made things like axe handles and hoe handles over the years,
No, sir. Okay. Don't have the facilities to turn them down and get them smooth. See.
Okay.
Now, one thing I used to make all the time was butcher knives. I used to make knives. That was a hobby a long time, but it got to where it was so much time involved in making a good kitchen knife. I get hacksaw blades or either old cross-cut saws and cut out the steel and pour aluminum handles on them. Used to melt aluminum. Aluminum is hard to melt in a fire, but I used to melt and pour aluminum handles on them. Mm-hmm. And I used to make a lot of knives. Just sit still.
Okay. The blacksmith shop is right next to the net shop, probably about 10 feet away from one another. Oh, I see. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I made this knife for my son to cut salad with. It wasn't quite big enough for a salad knife, you know, to cut in the cafe, and he didn't want it. But see, this is melted and poured on that handle. That's a piece of cross-cut saw. That's a good piece of steel. And one day I'm going to take it and grind it and make a good fish knife out of it. To split mullet
split
with.
Split mullet, right.
Split mullet and cut mullet with. So it's a good piece of steel, but it was just made too big and it wasn't right the shape for what he wanted. Mm-hmm. But I used to do that. That was a hobby. You take a piece of flat metal and bend it in the shape you want it and put it down, weight it down where it won't run up and notch this handle in here and just melt your aluminum and pour it in it, and then you can take it. Any kind of a file and just dress it off and you can see yourself in it almost.
Was that sort of a hobby and sideline for blacksmiths occasionally to make knives like that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Did you learn that from anybody in particular?
No, sir. Well, I learned it when I was working at St. Joe Paper Company back in 55. I was in the shop then. I worked St. Joe Paper Company about 7.5 years back in the 50s, see?
Yeah. And somebody there was making it.
Well, after I left the shipyard, now I did go back and work for St. Joe Paper Company, see. I went from here back to Rarefields and went fishing for Rarefields again. I had fished for them before. And then I left there and I went to St. Joe Paper Company. I stayed there all during the rest of the war. Mm-hmm. All the rest of the war. Left the shipyard, went to Rarefields, fished with Rarefields a while, and I went from there back to St. Joe Paper Company and worked for them for several years before I left there. And then I went to road work, and from road work to the bridge, and then from the bridge on over here.
Okay. So what, you spend a lot of, 3 or 4 months out of each year is making nets during the cold weather pretty much?
Not then I didn't, but now I do. Now I do. Yeah, in the summer. In the summer.
Okay.
Now, in the winter, I slow down.
Mm-hmm. Like
cold
right
months, this, and I make a few and hang them up like these. Just make them and hang them up. Mm-hmm. Then in the summer, sometimes I'll sell as high as 4 or 5 nets in 1 week. Mm-hmm. People just flock in. And then I get right down to taking orders. Mm-hmm. Taking orders. Man, I say, I need a 12-foot net. I said, well, 2.5 days you can pick it up.
Now, these are primarily commercial fishermen?
No, sir. It's sport fishermen.
Sport fishermen.
It's just hobby.
Okay.
Just hobby. People that's got good jobs, paying jobs. And they do that just for hobby out
on
here.
Weekends. Or
weekends,
whatever.
And when the fish is running in at night, they fish a lot off in these piers on the gulf out here at night for those mullet running at night and afternoon. Mm-hmm. Some of my customers has got good jobs. Paper mill, I got a dental lab technician, and several other different customers that just does that as a hobby, see, for this. The commercial fishermen don't get down to that smaller
too
operation.
Too small a net for them.
Too smaller operation, see.
Now, you do still do a lot of fishing yourself.
Yes, sir. I gill net fish mostly. Mm-hmm. I don't cast net too much. I take a cast net with me most of the time in my boat to make the fish hit the net or catch them in a hole or a ditch. But my legs has got so bad until I don't do too much cast net on account of the walking and wading. But I do use my gill net. I keep all the fish that I need to eat most all the time. I either keep them in my freezer or keep them fresh as long as I want them with my gill net. I go about once a month, get all the fish I want, see. Mm-hmm. And then I get my own oysters. And
like the ones you have right out here.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I go get them myself.
How often do you go down to Apalachicola in that area to go oystering?
I'll average once a month. Mm-hmm. During the winter, not over that, maybe not hardly that much.
Now, is this oystering season?
Yes, sir.
It is, okay.
Yes, sir, from September until May.
Okay, that's...
April is the last day of April, the last day of oyster season. First day of September is the beginning of season, see. They're legal, but I don't go until after Christmas, till it gets cold, because I don't like oysters. And, well, I might go a little bit once or twice before Christmas, but I don't like oysters when the weather's hot.
Why is that?
They're not good. They're not fat. They're not good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's several things that goes with the season, see. The oyster season, cold weather, it's time you want oysters.
Yep.
Summertime, you don't care too much for oysters, see. You want something else in the summer.
Now, do you need a license to catch oysters since you're not a commercial operation?
Not for your own use.
Up to
so many bags a day.
Mm-hmm. And you never exceed that because you only got once
a month? No, one or two bags a day. I think it's 4 bags, I believe it is, that you can have for your own use, but you never exceed it. But to sell any,
mm-hmm.
you do have to have a license. Now, I can go catch all the fish I want, but if I sell any fish to a licensed dealer, I've got to have my license. I got $25. This year, they just came out with a $25 state license mm-hmm. to sell any of your catch. If you go out on a party boat and catch more fish than you want to eat, if you sell them, you've got to sell them to a commercial house.
And then they sell them.
Then they resell them.
Yeah.
And you've got to have that license.
You're talking about putting meat in the freezer. Years ago, did people used to can meat, or can their fish, rather?
Not too much. They're doing it more now than they did then.
Fish canning?
Right. Yeah.
Does your wife do that at all?
No, sir. We don't do it.
Don't do that.
That's what you got to have to oyster with if you're doing it commercial. See, that's a health card.
Permit, yeah.
Health permit, see.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to have another license, which I don't have, is a tonguing permit. They've got it licensed pretty bad.
Yeah.
But last 2 or 3 years, the people in Panama City have been catching mullet and canning them like tuna.
Mm-hmm.
And they say they're real good. Now, my wife, we haven't done any that way.
Mm-hmm.
But there's several ways to fix those fish that they catch. They smoke cook them.
Right.
They got a smoke cooker. They cook them in a few minutes. Some people smoke them over a period of time. And then you can deep fry them. And then they say that they make good tuna salad, or, you know, like making tuna salad, salmons. I hadn't tried any that way yet, but I'm planning on it. You have to have pressure cooker. You cook them with the bone or without it. You can take the bone out, or you can cook that bone till it's just like a salmon or tuna. You don't have to worry about it.
What do you mostly catch in your gill nets when you go out?
Mullet, flounders, and redfish,
mm-hmm.
trout. That's your four principal fish. It's a mullet, a flounder, a redfish, and a speckled trout.
And that's for your family's use, basically?
Family use, or friends, whoever's with me and all. We just go out. If I go and get one of those Low Boy coolers full, I've got all I want for another month.
Sure.
See, I don't go out commercially. But now, this last winter, first time I went out after I had my operation, I went down to right where I was at. That was before the freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And the oyster bars were just full of oysters. I mean, you can walk out there in the dry, just like under a pecan tree.
About a month or so ago?
Before Christmas, yeah. Up until Christmas. And you could just walk out there when the tide was down low and just pick them up. There they was. Here's one here, and here's one over there. You just pick them up and put them in your bucket. Just all the man that was with me that day that I went, he got 21 bushels that day.
21 bushels?
That day. And it takes two of those bucket full of white buckets to make a bushel.
That's a lot of oysters.
A lot of oysters. Well, I got me 2 bushels, what I wanted, pushed out there and struck my gill net. Wind was blowing pretty rough, right by myself. First time I'd worked any since I had my operation. And I caught over 200 pounds of mullet at one strike and didn't even warn them.
Yeah, what'd you do with them?
I sold them for 10 cents a pound.
Sold them to one of the fish houses?
Yeah, one of the fish houses to get rid of them because I had more and it was late and bad weather and blowing, and I wanted to get rid of them, so I just sold them for 10 cents a pound, except what I give away and kept.
Sure. Yeah. Around here, other places on the coast of Florida, I know people used to make their own small wooden boats, sea skiffs.
Yes, sir. This one of mine is homemade.
Mm-hmm.
I bought it off of a feller. His son made it, and I bought it off of him.
Are there very many people still making those sea skiffs? I know there aren't very many people,
not many.
But do you know of anybody?
No, sir, I don't know of anybody that actually makes them to sell.
Okay.
I really, there's people around here in Panama City, and I tried to contact somebody when I wanted this little skiff. It's what I wanted. I didn't have it. I sold the one I had, and I didn't have one. I kept trying to find one, and I couldn't find only one boat maker, and they say it's not too good since then, but he wanted too much money to make it, see?
He makes wooden boats?
Yeah, he made wooden boats. I don't even remember his name, but I contacted him, but he wanted too much for it, so I just kept looking, and I found this one already made and bought it and done some repair on it to get it for what I wanted.
Let me put the tape over here.